This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, both Russia and Iran say the U.S. has crossed a red line and they will be forced to respond if additional military actions are taken by the U.S. against Syria. Arizona Congressman Trent Franks, a member of the House Armed Services Committee, is here to respond. And once again, ISIS shattered the peace as Christians gathered for worship, this time at a Coptic church in Egypt during Palm Sunday services. Dr. Tom Farr, president of the Religious Freedom Institute, is here with details of this latest attack. Also, the Supreme Court has a new Associate Justice. Neil Gorsuch was sworn in this morning as the 113th Supreme Court Justice. And he won't have to wait long to get his feet wet. Several key cases will soon be argued before the nation's highest court. FRC's Travis Weber joins me for the discussion of those cases. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T. Perkins. All right. Following last Thursday night strike on a Syrian airbase that was used to launch a chemical weapons attack, the U.S., strike by the U.S., Russian and Iranian officials are vowing to strike back at the U.S. if the U.S. crosses more red lines, as they put it, with further aggression against Syria. Joining us now is Congressman Trent Franks. He represents Arizona's 2nd Congressional District, and he is a member of the House Armed Services Committee. Congressman Franks, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, sir. It's good to be back, always.
Well, Trent, I saw you over the weekend on Fox News talking about this as well as a member of the House Armed Services Committee. Obviously, you have spoken out in support of the president's decisive move to take actions against Syria. You, along with your colleagues, believe he did take the right move.
Tony, I do. I mean, probably one of the most difficult decisions any president ever makes is a military strike because the implications include human casualty and the potential to escalate dangerous confrontations throughout the world. So I want you to know that I don't approach this with some sort of attaboy or go get them, Mr. President. This is something that I think he did that was both proportional and strategic. In that the proportional part of it, it was pretty incontrovertible that the American surveillance had tracked aircraft from this base to the tragedy that occurred. In fact, after they hit the civilians there with the sarin gas, then they bombed the hospital where the civilians went. So I just have to say to you, there was clear attribution here, and the president aimed at that source, and for that reason, I think you can say that it's clearly proportional. It's strategic in that it puts America back in the strategic position of saying, all right, if you want to affirm or support a guy like Assad that chokes his own little babies, I mean the children of his own country with sarin gas, let Russia defend that to the world. Let Iran defend that to the world. We've been in such a difficult situation for the last 8 years where, you know, the only reason we're talking about red lines right now is because Barack Obama drew one, and then it turned pink, and then it turned to vapor. So now we've kind of put ourselves back in a strategic position. It's a very dangerous time because the Russians and Iran would like to reestablish themselves in the forward motion that they had under Barack Obama.
Congressman, what was the extent of America's attacks on that airbase? What do we know?
Well, I chair the Missile Defense Caucus, so I'm very familiar with the type of ordnance that we drop. These are Tomahawk missiles. They're about 18, 20 feet long. They're almost 24 inches across. They have a 1,000-pound conventional warhead. They fly at about 550 miles an hour, and they're extremely accurate. They can be reprogrammed in the air. They're extremely effective. There was a deliberate effort made to choose targets that didn't entail human casualty, whether it was Russians or Syrians. The effort was made not to do that. So this was a well-thought-out plan, and these 59 Tomahawk missiles, one of them fell in the sea, but 58 of them landed within a 3.5 to 4-minute period, which is a pretty dramatic display of resolve on the part of the United States part, and it indicates clearly that we could do a whole lot more if we wanted to, but that this is a statement that we're not going to stand by and let chemical weapons be used on innocent women and children, nor are we going to look past our national interest in making sure that that doesn't proliferate in the world. And, of course, I don't mean to overanalyze this, but I know a lot of little children have been being killed by barrel bombs and all kinds of other horrible things. And it doesn't mean that just because they're killed by, you know, gas, that that's the only time we respond. But this is a moment when the American military had a key opportunity and where the president had a key strategic moment, and he responded. Rather than standing there with a golf club in his hand like Barack Obama did, he did what was necessary to make our point clear.
Congressman Franks, the Russian and Iranian governments have spoken out against America's actions against Syria and say that further actions could result in them taking action against the U.S. Do you believe that Russia and Iran were enabling Assad's campaign of mass murder against his own civilians?
Of course they were, Tony. There's no question about that whatsoever. Even Russia's own attacks within Syria hit far more civilian targets, hit far more Syrian targets than they ever hit ISIS targets. Russia has killed multiple numbers more innocent Syrian civilians than they ever have hit ISIS fighters. So your question is really one that's without a doubt clear. The Russians and the Iranians have backed the Assad regime, not strictly to fight ISIS. I mean, we need to fight ISIS. No one wants to destroy that group more than I do. But the truth is, neither are acceptable. ISIS is unacceptable. We should wipe them out to the last person. And it's not acceptable to stand by and let Syria do some of the things that they're doing, because obviously you know that there was a fissile materials plant that was being built in Syria that could have threatened the whole world. And our Israeli friends, let's just say they dismantled it in a fairly dramatic fashion.
Well, Ryan Crocker, former U.S. ambassador to Syria, said yesterday that retaliation by Russia or Syria over the U.S. airstrikes would be insane. What do you think?
I completely agree. I mean, I don't want to ever just force someone into trying to make a response to somehow back up their mojo, but it would be completely ridiculous for Russia to attack us based on what we did, because they would be backing a lunatic that was gassing his own children, first of all, his nation's own children. And secondly, it's completely outside the realm of reasonable response. I do not think that the Russians are going to attack America. And I think if Iran does that, that might be our opportunity to do away with this inexorable march that they have toward nuclear weapons.
If they do make further moves, are we prepared as a country to do more if necessary?
Well, the honest answer to that is, Tony, we're not as prepared as we should be, but we are more prepared than anyone might think. You know, the United States, the arsenal of freedom, I call it, is still the most capable military force in the world. And even under Barack Obama, underfunding it and decimating it over the last 8 years, we're still a very capable nation. And I think Russia knows that. And certainly Iran does. So, I mean, we're not where we should be. And I'll tell you, a big point that should be made here is whether it's economically or in terms of our defense apparatus or in terms of our constitutional architecture in this country, we are so underwater. Barack Obama has left us in such a deep hole that now it's very difficult for Donald Trump to kind of put us back up on an even horizon. But I absolutely see him doing that, whether it's the appointment of Neil Gorsuch, whether it's an economic turnaround, whether it's the work that we're doing on Obamacare to try to bring back a market-based insurance policy in America, and whether it is trying to rebuild our military and to try to demonstrate to the world that America is committed to the ideals that made us who we are. And I just think that there are two people that should be very grateful for what happened in Syria recently. That should be those victims of the world that never thought anybody was ever going to be there for them again. Now mm-hmm. they know America is back. And for those terrorists, for those people that or have no concept of humanity toward the innocent, they need to realize that the arsenal of freedom is awake again, and they may be in the crosshairs.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. My guest, Congressman Trent Franks, he represents the 2nd Congressional District of Arizona. He is a member of the House Armed Services Committee. And, of course, you've heard him on here many times on Washington Watch, a great pro-family leader, one of the most pro-life members of the United States Congress. We're about out of time, but I want to kind of get a sense, based on the information you have gotten, you talked about the effectiveness of the Tomahawk missiles, but do we know if this has inflicted any substantial damage upon the Syrian capabilities, or is this just kind of a show of force, or did it have an effect?
It didn't do so much to damage their runways, Tony, but it did some pretty serious damage to some of their aircraft. Some of those aircraft will never fly again, and I mean, that's an understatement. So it impacted their capability. They're going to spend more replacing those airplanes than we will replacing the Tomahawk missiles. I can suggest to you that much.
Well, that's a good trade. It gave our guys some practice and took out some of the bad guys' toys to play with. One final question for you, Congressman Franks. The administration, both Nikki Haley, ambassador to the UN, as well as the Secretary of State, have suggested that Assad really, he can't be leading the country anymore. Can we look for more actions on behalf of the United States to see that he is removed from power?
I think that will be the goal of the Trump administration. Now, they have several things. You know, we have diplomacy, we have information, we have military, and we have economic capabilities to be able to bring that about. And I think that all of them are on the table finally again. Remember, diplomacy is always heard in the shadow and seen in the shadow of military might. So now that our military option is clear again, I think our diplomacy is going to have a lot more effect. And I just have to say to you, whatever they say about Donald Trump and the way maybe he says certain things, what he does has been pretty right on. And I'm very encouraged in the direction that we're going.
I would agree with you. Trent Franks, always great to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us on this Monday afternoon.
God bless you.
All right. Congressman Trent Franks, he represents the 2nd Congressional District of Arizona, obviously a true blue member, good friend. Find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. I think it was decisive. I had a few minutes to converse with the vice president on Friday. And just mentioned that, and that was one of the topics that we discussed. And I think it's very important that we now have an administration that is not only America first, but American values. And when you see children being gassed with sarin gas, knowing what's been taking place in Syria and how, in part, it's been facilitated by the absence of American leadership, it is encouraging to see bold, decisive, moral leadership again. Look, it's a dangerous place. The world is a dangerous place. And, of course, I think we're going to see a lot more in the days ahead. But at least we have somebody who has courage and backbone again. All right. When we come back, we're going to be talking about some of those dangerous places. Egypt. Yesterday, Coptic Christians targeted by ISIS. Nearly 50 were killed by suicide bombers. We're going to be talking about it with Dr. Tom Farr. What can be done? Does America have a role to play in protecting Christians? We're going to talk about it. Don't go away.
We at the American Family Association believe men should not be allowed to use women's restrooms or dressing rooms. Yet the policy of Target allows just that. Do you agree that this policy poses danger to our women and children? Then sign the Boycott Target Pledge. When you do, you're saying, until Target makes the safety of women and children a priority, I'll shop elsewhere. The good news is the boycott is making a big difference. A Target financial report indicates a dramatic drop in their sales and earnings. And a Wall Street Journal article clearly shows that Target CEO Brian Cornell regrets his company's policy announcement welcoming men to use women's restrooms and dressing rooms. We're convinced that together we can stop this insanity before more women and children become victims. Sign the pledge today and tell others about the boycott. Go to afa.net/target. That's afa.net/target.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Do you care about protecting your household, your family, your neighborhood? Dumb questions, huh? Of course we care, and we care hugely. Do you know of anyone who doesn't want to protect their household? At least any sane person. I don't. So when a government official or political party argues and votes for opening our borders to anyone without concern for their background, like rapists, murderers, terrorists, we should be very concerned, for make no mistake, there are those who have ill intentions to undermine our country, our constitution, freedoms, including our religious liberty, our lives. Stay alert to the political ploys of the leftists as they verbalize falsehoods, working to dumb us down and to destroy our national sovereignty and supplant our Constitution with socialism or even Sharia law. May God wake us up and strengthen our leaders and ourselves. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
These days, health insurance is incredibly expensive, especially if you don't have coverage through your employer. If you're concerned about the costs or the ethical dilemmas of insurance, here's great news. There's an affordable, God-honoring alternative. It's called MediShare. Unlike insurance, MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing community whose members share each other's medical expenses. It's about half the cost of insurance, and it's fully acceptable under the law. Best of all, you never pay for things that go against your beliefs. If you're a Christian looking for a truly affordable healthcare solution, MediShare is just what the doctor ordered.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your healthcare. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical healthcare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, ISIS is claiming responsibility for two deadly Palm Sunday bombings at Coptic churches in Egypt, where almost 50 people were killed as a result of these bombings. Both churches were packed with worshipers for the start of the Holy Week, leading into Easter. With us now is Dr. Tom Farr. He's the president of the Religious Freedom Institute. He served in the U.S. Army and Foreign Service for 28 years and does a tremendous amount to advocate for religious freedom in the persecuted church around the world. Tom, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Glad to be with you, Tony.
Tom, what do we know so far about these attacks that took place in Egypt yesterday?
Well, we know they follow a long pattern of attacks on our Coptic Christian brothers and sisters in Egypt. These things have been going on and intensifying in recent years. This one, like most of the predecessors, this attack was mounted by ISIS or some form, in this case it's ISIS, but in other cases other forms of radical Islam. Our hearts go out to these people, and I would remind your listeners that this has happened very recently. We had attacks in December. We had, again, attacks in February. It seems to be mounting in intensity, but, in fact, this is not new. It isn't just within the last several months. I'll never forget, and I assume that none of your listeners will either, the terrible image of the 21 Coptic Christian men kneeling on the shores of the Mediterranean back in 2015. With those orange prison suits on, and each one of them with an ISIS terrorist hooded and a machete behind them. And many of those men died with the name of Jesus on their lips. That was a terrible, terrible incident, but one that is continuing in similar ways. I will note that one thing has changed, and that is that back in 2015 when this happened, the administration at the time refused to refer to these victims as Christians. And much of the mainstream press did as well. That at least has changed. The State Department, you may have seen yesterday, issued a statement saying that these were Christians, these were Christian churches that were bombed. And the president, who had just met a few days ago, President Trump had met with President El-Sisi of Egypt, called LCC and said, expressed his confidence that the Egyptian government would be able to protect the Christian minorities, the Christian citizens of their country.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that, Tom, because the Coptic Christians make up about 10% of the 90 million people living in Egypt, both Protestant and Catholic Coptic believers. The government under LCC, what are they doing? Are they adequately protecting Christians? I know there are some Coptic Christians saying, you know, they're not given access to certain government positions and jobs, and there seems to be kind of almost a second type of citizenship, a secondary citizenship, second-class citizenship. Are they getting the full protection of the law from the government against these ISIS attacks?
Well, the government has initiated, the president has initiated a state of emergency. The church that was in Alexandria, the Church of St. Mark, which is an ancient church, which was bombed, the police actually were able to prevent the attackers from getting into the church, which they unfortunately did, and the other one, which is where most of the people were killed. So the police are trying. I think it is what they're doing is inadequate. But I would make the larger point, Tony, that this is an ideology that they are fighting. And while security measures need to be increased, our own military measures against ISIS in Iraq and Syria are vital. Even if completely successful, no military force or security regime ever implemented can stop this kind of vicious ideology. It's a war of ideas going on within Islam, and as good as I think this administration has been in the short term, I think there is much to do that we are not doing that we need to be getting involved, because it's not just Christians and other minorities overseas. This has hit us here in our homeland. It's the same disease. It's the same ideology. And unless we can get involved in this in a productive and helpful way, I fear that we're going to be suffering, and the Egyptians are going to be suffering this over the long term.
Well, I think you're right. I think it's more than just the Egyptians. There is a correlation between what's happening here at home in terms of our domestic policy and the hostility toward the Christian faith that we've seen in the last 8 years, and the growing attacks on Christians internationally. I think it sends a message, basically sends a green flag to terrorists and tyrants abroad when our own government is indifferent to religious freedom here at home.
That's right. And you may recall last year, the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, which is designed to protect the civil rights of every American, issued a report in which the chairman said religious freedom is a front for bigotry and hatred and Christian supremacy. That's the first freedom of the American Constitution being treated this way by a government official. So we have a big problem here. But when it comes to overseas, I think there's some things that we can do about it. One is the administration needs to go ahead and appoint immediately a qualified, talented ambassador at large for international religious freedom, which is the individual who would be most focused on this issue overseas. And I'm hearing the administration is putting out suggestions that they're going to wait until the fall. Well, we can't wait. People cannot wait for us to get in this game. So I would urge those who care about this to get to particularly the senators to say, look, we need to get moving, because they would have to confirm this U.S. ambassador for religious freedom.
Tom, we're up against break, almost out of time, but you have a conference coming up next week on the topic of the response to Christian persecution. Tell our listeners quickly.
For those that are interested, this is called Under Caesar's Sword. It's Thursday the 20th. If you're interested in coming, if you're in the D.C. area, it's a public event all day at the National Press Club. You can go to religiousfreedominstitute.org and scroll down to our events page, and you will see what is to be done. That's what we're going to focus on, not just talking about it, complaining about it. What can we do to help these Christians? We invite your listeners to come and join us.
All right, Tom Farr, we'll have you back on to talk about that, and we'll encourage our folks that are in the area to attend. Thanks so much for being
with us. Thank you, Tom.
All right, Dr. Tom Farr, to find out more about the conference, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Com. All right, coming up next, we have a new Supreme Court justice. What's ahead for him? We'll talk about it with our own Travis Weber next here on Washington Watch.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
One of my favorite numbers coming out this week, NFIB, the National Federation of Independent Businesses. This is their NFIB Small Business Index. It's expected to stay well over 100. It looks like it may back off a little bit, but last look, it was 105.3. That is extremely good. That means very confident. We have seen the number even higher than that. It'll be interesting in light of the job numbers and some other economic data coming out, what is going to happen with that. We also get this week producer price index number. That will likely be about the same. I'm guessing it's going to be around 0.3%. Then on Friday, we get consumer price index, and that is probably not to move much. I wouldn't be surprised to see it basically flat from where it was last look. Retail sales numbers come out again. That has been extremely anemic. That's not going anywhere for the month of March. It is very unlikely that we see a lot of movement in the retail sales numbers. And then we get consumer sentiment numbers also coming out for the month of April. Of course, business inventories is a big number, but the two big numbers, NFIB and consumer sentiment, they're the numbers that we're going to watch to try to get a little bit of a snapshot as we move forward.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. As I've said before, we're here because of people like you that are standing with the Family Research Council. And this outreach, Washington Watch, we, unlike NPR, we get no government money, all supported by listeners and friends and partners of the Family Research Council. If you'd like to be a part of that, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. Also, if you're interested in joining us, the end of July, 1st of August, for a cruise to Alaska, some of our policy experts like General Boykin, Ken Blackwell, Michelle Bachman, will all be on that cruise. If you'd like to join us, beautiful, beautiful cruise. Go to the website, tonyperkins.com, and you can find all the information right there. All right, in a public swearing-in ceremony at the White House earlier today, I was unable to be there, just couldn't make it back into town, but Neil Gorsuch took the oath of office from Justice Anthony Kennedy, and Chief Justice John Roberts administered the oath of office in a private ceremony at the Supreme Court later. Here's actually the public swearing-in earlier today.
And that I will faithfully and impartially discharge and perform.
And that I will faithfully and impartially discharge and perform.
All the duties incumbent upon me.
All the duties incumbent upon me.
As Associate Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States.
As Associate Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Well, and he is going to be doing a lot of praying as he's got a lot of cases ahead of him as he jumps right into it. With us now is Travis Weber, Director of the Center for Religious Liberty at the Family Research Council, to kind of list out for us some of the upcoming cases that are set to come before the High Court. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, let's get a sense of what awaits Justice Gorsuch as he now sits on the case. We have sits on the court. We have nine justices now, full court. What are some of the cases they're going to be hearing very soon?
Yeah, so next week, oral argument in Trinity Lutheran Church versus Pauley will occur, and the court will issue a decision in that case by the end of June. This is an important case, and we filed an amicus brief in this case. It involves whether a church can be excluded from a state grant program dispensing money to refinish playground surfaces when that money is dispensed to non-religious organizations. So this is really about the participation of religious institutions and churches in the public square. It's an important case in that respect, even though the legal issue is a more narrow constitutional issue.
What other do we have some life issues that may be finding their way before the court?
So there's nothing currently pending before the court, or even in terms of cases that are currently where the parties are seeking a hearing before the court. But certainly we can expect within the next few terms a life issue in some way to arise before the court, you know, possibly involving a conscience issue, a religious liberty issue on the life issue more broadly, such as the Stormans case out of Washington, in which they didn't want to dispense certain abortion-causing drugs through their pharmacy. This is a question it will be important for the court to weigh in on. We can expect these types of issues to arise and Justice Gorsuch to be a good vote on them. But specifically right now, there are other cases which we're watching closely, United States versus Sterling, over whether a military service member is protected by the Religious Freedom Restoration Act when he or she wants to post a Bible verse at their workstation. So in this case, our friends at First Liberty Institute are asking the court to hear the case. Our own General Boykin has filed an amicus brief in that case with other retired generals, weighing in on the importance of religious freedom to military service and morale more broadly. So we hope the court accepts that case and vindicates the service members' rights. And in addition, there are one of the wedding vendor cases, the Masterpiece Cakes case out of Colorado, currently before the court in terms of whether they're going to take it up. The attorneys are asking the court to take it up, and at some point the court is going to have to take one of those. In all these, we expect and hope that Justice Gorsuch will weigh in on the side of the religious freedom claim. His record has shown that that's how he'll rule when he was on the 10th Circuit, and we expect him to continue doing that on the Supreme Court.
But Travis, that may still only give 4 votes in favor of, true constitutional interpretation, because we have Justice Kennedy that seems to vacillate back and forth on a number of those important cases, giving a, one way or the other, a 5-4 decision.
That's true, and we have to hope that Justice Kennedy sees these cases as he saw Hobby Lobby and Town of Greece versus Galloway, in which he ruled in favor of the religious freedom claim. His unfortunate rulings have had a serious detrimental impact, but he has ruled well in some cases, and we just have to pray and hope and persuade that the constitutional and statutory religious freedom claims should prevail in all these cases, and that's the case that we have to continue making, and we will continue to make in public argument, and when we can participate as amicus before the court.
What do you think the chances are that President Trump is going to have another opportunity to appoint a justice to the court?
Well, it's tough to put a number on that, but there is a realistic possibility that he will again get to nominate someone, and we hope that it again will be an originalist, a textualist, someone who adheres to the law and deciding the law and not making the law, as unfortunately so many judges and justices do these days, but rather leaves that role to the Congress.
Well, Justice Gorsuch has been extremely clear on the role of judges versus the role of legislators, so we fully anticipate that that's exactly what he will do now that he is on the nation's highest court. Travis, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Obviously, we're going to continue to keep our eye on some of these cases as they come before the courts.
Thanks for having me on, Tony.
All right. Travis Weber with FRC, with our religious liberty. He's got a new pamphlet. I'm going to talk about that when we come back. But also, I'm going to be taking your phone calls here in a moment. So don't go away. We're back with more after this.
Here for your encouragement and your walk with God. This is David Wolin with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. Over the years, a number of young couples have asked my wife and me to give them premarital counseling. And my favorite session is the one where we help them identify unspoken expectations about how marriage works. Things like how they'll handle money, parenting, extended family, and holidays. It's amazing how many important things like that go unsaid. But you have to say them, or the other person will never know. In your relationship with God, communication is also key. But unlike human relationships, God the Father already knows everything about you. even things you don't know about yourself. As Jesus says, your Father knows what you need even before you ask Him. Get Anchor Devotional delivered in print to your home every month. It's easy. Sign up at getanchor.com.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Join Norman Geisler, Richard Land, Michael Brown, Frank Turek, and others for Southern Evangelical Seminary's National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 13th and 14th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Enjoy informative talks, a live debate, and a dialogue with Ken Ham from Answers in Genesis. Plus, there's the premiere of the American Family Association documentary, The God Who Speaks. Register by May 1st and receive a special gift. Visit ses.edu for details.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
You know, there's probably never been a more important time in our economy to be thinking about a charitable gift annuity. I hope you'll do that just to shore up, to firm up some more income, permanent income, income that you can count on for the rest of your life while you're doing the Lord's work. A charitable gift annuity has been something I've been talking about for 25 years. Finally, we're seeing even mainstream start to get on board with the merits of charitable gift annuities. I hope you'll consider it. You can call the AFA Foundation. Someone there will help you work through the details and find out whether you qualify for a charitable gift annuity.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Hope you had a great weekend. Weather was beautiful where I was. They pretty much across the country. It was a beautiful weekend. All right. First, before I go, 866-372-7234 is the number. But wait, here's the question. We were talking about what happened yesterday in Egypt. And as Tom Farr was pointing out, this is not the first time we've seen a steady attack on Coptic Christians, usually around religious holidays. But that's not the only place. We're seeing it around the globe, and it was reaching unprecedented levels under the Obama administration. And, you know, should we be surprised? I mean, we saw the persecution of Christians here, prosecution of Christians here in the United States. There is a correlation. Anyway, do you believe we have a responsibility? And I say we are citizens of the United States. This is our government. Do you believe we have a responsibility to speak and act on behalf of persecuted Christians overseas? Would you like to see our State Department speak out more forcefully on behalf of those being persecuted for their faith? What do you think? 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. This weekend, another tangible reminder of the evil that is in the world and how it is directed at Christians. All right, I wanted to mention Travis, who is the director of our Center for Religious Liberty. We actually had him on last week talking about a new publication regarding religious liberty and, things we can do, things you need to know. And you can find out more about that at TonyPerkins.com, another one of our resources available here at the Family Research Council. You know, I was reading last week in John, I believe chapter 12, I don't have it in front of me, where Jesus went back to visit Lazarus after he had raised him from the dead, and the religious crowd, the Pharisees, were plotting how they could kill Lazarus, because more people were coming to see Lazarus, even than Jesus, because of what had been done for Lazarus. He'd been raised from the dead. You see, those who have been impacted by Christ, whose lives speak to the truth of the gospel, are just as much of a target as Jesus himself was. And we see that. We see that around the world. Now, that's just a given. It's going to happen. Of course, we don't need to live in fear, and we've seen examples of the heroic faith that many Christians have had in the Middle East who have faced death and have not yielded to the sword. Rather, they have stood firm in their faith. It's a solemn reminder and a challenge, really, to us here in this country. We're not being asked to die for our faith. We're simply being asked to live for our faith, not to cower in the face of the left-wing elitist who, you know, want no reference to God in the public square, certainly not Jesus Christ. You know, we need to take a page out of their book of courage, the Christians in the Middle East, and determine to live for our faith. But using our freedom as Americans, I believe we have to advocate for, speak for, and act on behalf of our brothers and sisters in Christ who are being persecuted for no other reason than their faith in Jesus Christ. And I believe that we should also advocate for other religious minorities that are being persecuted. The UN Declaration of Human Rights makes very clear, adopted back in 1948, that religious freedom is not just an American right, it is a human right. And I believe we need to speak with great clarity on that issue. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Oklahoma, where Ken is on the line. Ken, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you very much. How are you?
Good. I'm good, thank you. I just wanted to say, I guess I'll repeat what you just said. I feel like we need to stand for all the persecuted people in the world and not pick the persecuted du jour, if you will. Lately, it seems that we've picked one group over another, and I think that as our country, we should stand for all the persecuted people in the world. Now, as a Christian, Bible-reading, Christ-confessing Christian, I probably have a responsibility to certainly stand for Christians, but as a Christian, I should stand for all those people who need help from somebody that can help them. And so I would hope my government would do the same, stand for everybody.
Agreed. Agreed. I absolutely think that is the case. But what we find happening today, disproportionately, it is the Christians that are being persecuted. Now, our country has defended and should defend religious minorities, and that includes some Muslims that are being targeted for their faith by ISIS. But again, religious freedom, as laid out by the 1948 Declaration of Human Rights, which is, again, from the United Nations, not that they do much right, but on that particular account, they recognize that religious freedom is the right to choose or change one's religion, and everyone should have that right. That's not the case in most Muslim countries. It's certainly not something that ISIS holds to be the case. But we need to speak, I think, with clarity, with consistency to that issue. And I would agree, Ken, that it is for all persecuted people. And as Christians, in particular, we should be supporting those non-governmental organizations that specifically do relief and ministry to the persecuted Christians. Open Doors USA, Voice of the Martyrs, Samaritan's Purse, because they minister to all people, but they do this help first, as the scripture says, help those of the faith, the household of faith first, and move from there. Ken, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate you listening. Let's go to Indiana, where John is on the line. John, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. I'm calling referencing some of the persecution for political correctness purposes that's still going on even in our own country, not just for the regular army, but almost a repeat of what 2011 when Secretary Gates imposed the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Well, Secretary Carter's last action for the transgender purposes puts these semi-neutered rules in both our dwellings and in our training, and assignments for units is now going on. I had the 3-day drill this week in the National Guard where we got pulled back the third day, even though not all our guns were finished qualifying, because we had to get the party line that's left over from the Obama administration spoken up, except for you and Chaplain Cruz, trying to stop this taking away our training time in order to be indoctrinated. And prayers for us here, because we can't speak out if we want to keep our positions. And I've made my views known to Senator Young, who's a former Marine from the Indiana, and I've even called Congressman Franks, who you just had on. So keep us in your prayers, and we'll continue to pray for the ones we're serving and trying to protect here.
I will, John. Hold on, John, because I was losing about every fifth word or you were fading out. You were pulled back in from field training in order to have some of this mandatory training on diversity or something along those lines?
Yes, it's HQDA directed from the Secretary of the Army, the former Secretary of the Army, who was an open homosexual. The new Air Force Commandant, we know she's of that persuasion also, but it's Secretary Carter is the one that's mandated it for all military, and now it's getting down to the Tier 2 and Tier 3 units who have very limited training time. I mean, it's bad enough that they undermine the active army. You know, those guys are pressed very hard, but they're depending on us if we get mobilized to be able right. To be ready, and we're in the middle of field training. We have to meet these, we spend more time on sexual assault and on transgender procedures than we do really on our military missions. There's just not enough time left on a very limited training schedule.
Yeah, John, General. I had General Boykin on the program Friday. We were talking, maybe it was Friday. I know it was one day last week we were talking. I had him on a couple of days because we were talking about Syria and North Korea. But we were talking specifically about that issue of training that, you know, there's limited training time to begin with, and something has to give. And so every time you roll out a new one of these social engineering programs and you've got to indoctrinate people with it, as you just pointed out, John, that's exhibit A, that you miss training time that will make you proficient in what the military's mission is, which is to fight and win wars, to be better prepared for diversity and, you know, all this other garbage that they've been pushing on our military. And you're right, it's, you know, of course, this stuff, once it starts rolling downhill, it's kind of hard to stop. But that has been a point of discussion, is rolling some of this back from the Obama administration now that the Trump administration is in. And none of this is going to just happen on its own. You have to have individuals. I've made the same point about the State Department and this topic we're talking about with religious freedom, where that has been eclipsed under the Obama administration as they push the same radical sexual agenda onto other nations. And it's not just going to go away because there was an election. You have to have people in those positions that are willing to ferret it out, to get rid of it and return to the proper mission. So, John, you're spot on. Absolutely right. All right, let's go to Texas, where Carol is on the line. Carol, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you.
How are you today?
I am well. How are you?
I'm super. Thank you.
You know, the question, yes, I think we should take a stronger role. I believe we should do what we can to stop this from happening. The thing is, it's a double-edged sword. We have a military right now that has been so gutted, there's no way that we could possibly have people on the ground working to protect these people who are being persecuted, who are being killed.
Right.
And
I think you're right. I mean, our military is stretched, and I want to be very clear about this. I'm not saying, of course, I'm not like Barack Obama. I would not take anything off the table in terms of backing up our words, but just simply to make it a priority, which it is a statutory priority for the State Department to advocate for, and that requires training State Department personnel, Foreign Service officers in religious liberty. It could be as easy as helping non-governmental organizations. Oh, you went away, Carol. Didn't mean for you to go away. To equip them to use the court systems to get proper defense. So there's a lot that can be done far short of military action. I mean, that should be the last resort, because you are absolutely correct, and I know you have a son that's in the military, and so you're very close to this, that we have stretched our military, well, we've decimated it with the cuts, sequestration. The president, President Obama, wanted money to go to domestic social programs and not to the military. And, of course, with all of the social engineering we were talking about, the morale and the moral compass of the military has been strained. And so, yes, that should be last resort. But we can have the State Department speaking out in these meetings. I mean, I've talked about this extensively in the past, some of the cases we've been involved in where our own State Department wouldn't even talk with ambassadors from foreign countries on particular cases. And I know specifically of some cases where people have been imprisoned, Christians, for their faith in majority Muslim countries, and it was not the administration that secured their release. And it just by communicating that this is a priority, which comes, you know, not that I'm a big advocate of all the foreign aid that we give out, but certainly if we're going to give aid to some of these countries, it ought to be connected to basic human rights, which would include religious freedom. So all of that can be on the table and should be clear. It should be out front. And we should be very, very vocal about the fact that, hey, we put a high priority on this, which would be the reverse of the last administration. Carol, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you being a faithful listener to Washington Watch. We got a couple calls. We're not going to be able to get to the rest of the calls on the board because we're just about out of time. But we'll continue to monitor this, and as we move into Passion Week, probably going to be talking more about this whole issue of religious freedom. As Christians, I do believe we need to advocate. And one way we advocate for religious freedom is that we use our religious freedom and we live out our faith in a real and a tangible way. Well, folks, out of time. Thanks for joining us today on this Monday edition. Lord willing, we'll be back again tomorrow. I hope you will as well. And bring a friend. Introduce them to Washington Watch. Until next time, you got it. Ephesians chapter 6, the Apostle Paul says, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.